Episode of Lions Collective. I'm your host, Jeff Iafredi from Crunch Time Sports. To my right is a Detroit Football Network's own Justin Rogers. And then below him, the Athletic's own Colton Pouncey, not in his house. He's in the padded room. And then to his left is 97.1's own Will Birchfield. And he is not, well, he's in the same place as last week. So this is like building, trying to kind of get some consistency. But fellas, how are we doing? How are we doing? Coming off a loss here to the Rams. How are we doing?
A loss that we can pin entirely on Colton, right? I mean, didn't he buck the trend last week of everyone picking against the Lions?
Yeah, that is true.
We can just confirm that.
That is on me, yeah.
Colton was also responsible with setting the edge on at least two of those runs.
I think so, yeah. But I'm doing good. I had a birthday this week, guys. I turned 31. I think I'm officially in unk range. I think that's right.
Like, yeah.
30 year unk. So,
I don't know, Colton, because I'm getting told I'm 25. I'm unk according to my 15-year-old brother. So I don't know. Like,
no, you're still big bro. You're still big bro.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I think 30 and up is unk.
All right. Got it. Just make sure. I don't know anymore. I don't know anymore. What I do know, and we're going to get into it. I learned something new today. I learned something new every week when Calvin Shepard speaks. And I say this kind of jokingly as well, but you just take one to two to three things away. You got a lot. Hey, if I would have made maybe two to three different decisions in my life, who knows where I'd be? That's what I like to think about. You know what I mean? So we'll get to that. The defense with Calvin Shepard, we'll get more into the Rams game. The Lions dropped the game on the road there in LA. I will say electric. It's kind of like how I felt, not the same example nearly, but I went to Michigan, Ohio State. It's how I felt in the first quarter watching Michigan. I'm sitting there, you know, they get the interception. Michigan goes down, kicks the field goal. I'm sitting there going, oh my gosh, this is like, they have a chance. And then, you know, after that, you start to kind of see the game play out and you're like, oh no, they didn't have a chance. The Lions obviously were much closer in that game than the Wolverines were to the Buckeyes. But in the first quarter, it looked like, hey, man, Lions are here. They're competing. Aiden gets the pick. And then you kind of see as the game plays out, you just couldn't get stops. You just couldn't get stops. And then the third quarter, the offense kind of had those woes. Dan kind of talked about it. Those plays on offense and defense that just pretty much sent the Lions away. What were some of your guys' takeaways from that loss in LA from this past weekend?
I think the biggest one for me was the Rams are the team the Lions thought they were, maybe the team the Lions were the previous 2 years. They just didn't have the ability to physically dominate, to win the bully game in the trenches that they've, you know, kind of established, particularly the offensive line. They couldn't run the ball effectively. The offense played pretty well outside of that struggle, but, you know, more importantly, they couldn't stop the run and they couldn't stop the deep passing game. And the Rams really kind of did what they wanted offensively throughout that game. Obviously the pick was a nice play. They scouted something on film that worked out really, really well. Outside of that, they forced, I guess, three punts, but really two punts in that game, one, three and out. And it was a tough, tough watch because you knew this was the best team in football offensively. You thought, given the stakes in this one, that the defense might stand on its head a little bit. And really, I thought they got, you know, I'm embarrassed.
Yeah, I think as you're watching that one unfold, like, I think we all thought it would be a shootout. And at least that's the game script that you probably need against a team like this if you're the Lions and how injured your secondary is. But I kind of agree with Justin in the sense that, like, their run defense has been pretty good all year. It's just the front seven really got bullied and they were confused on some things. There's some bad run fits that we're not used to seeing. Like, you know, there are moments where, and then, you know, things at the catch point where like some 50-50 balls that the Rams won and you didn't really compete there, but had a chance to make plays and you didn't. But I think getting bullied in the run game probably stands out first and foremost. You know, we obviously knew about the 13 personnel that they run and how they like to, you know, use their size to an advantage. It felt like they were kind of dictating that game on their own terms. It never really felt like the Lions were able to do that. And then on the flip side, offensively, I think early in that game, you're like, all right, this could be interesting. Like, this has got some fireworks here. It's going to be a shootout. Mm-hmm. Like, we like it. This is a fun game to watch. That was my takeaway at halftime. Like, this is an awesome game.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really, like, pleased at how this is playing out right now. This is really fun to, like, cover and watch. Then to get in the third quarter, and they have the three and outs, which are an issue. And I think that's kind of where you're like, yeah, they're having the pass game success and they're, you know, finding the spots in the zone. And I think the Lions kind of knew that they could do that. I think Morton was a little bit surprised by some of those looks that they were getting, kind of based on his comments today. But they got him, they capitalized in the first half. But when your offense kind of stalls out the way it did and you can't run the ball and there's a team that is so hot on the other side, it almost felt like if there was a way to get Demo involved more, and that's like, you know, you run the ball, you keep the chains, you stay ahead of the sticks, you keep that offense off the field. Maybe you give yourself a chance at the end of the game in the fourth quarter, keep it tighter than it was. But that wasn't really the script. So they couldn't really, you know, allow that to happen. So when you're forced to play in a shootout and you can't keep up with a hot offense, you're going to have outcomes like this. So it was tough because I don't want to blame this on the offense. You put up 34 on a team that allowed 17 per game. You basically doubled their, you know, defensive scoring output. You should feel pretty good, and you should win that game more often than not. That's what Kelvin Shepard said. If we score 30 points on offense, we should win that game. So the defense just wasn't good enough to get it done, and they couldn't find a way to squeak one out.
Yeah, it really was a show. I mean, to echo your point, Colton, at one point on the TV broadcast, I think early in the third quarter, when they were still trading punches, Tom Brady was like, I don't want this game to end. Like, yeah. It really was just that high-flying, electric fireworks show that we were all looking forward to. It lived up to the billing for two quarters anyways. But, yeah, for me, watching that game unfold, it was jarring to watch the strength of the Lions defense turn into a weakness. I mean, this is a defense that I think we can agree has been built around its linebackers, but also its interior defensive linemen. Like, they invested in a trio of big boys up front in DJ Reader, Aleem McNeil, and Tyleek Williams, who more often than not give the Lions the edge in the trenches. And that was so far from the case last Sunday. And look, Roy Lopez, good player. At times, he's been a great player for this team this year. He cannot be your best player out of those four. If Roy Lopez is outplaying on almost a snap-in, snap-out basis, the trio of Aleem, Reader, and Tyleek, a first-round pick, a $97 million investment, and a veteran free agent with a long track record, you're in trouble. And it felt like that was the case for most of Sunday afternoon. That definitely has to change down the stretch. And then offensively, I think one thing, you know, we've been grappling with this year is you look at the output on the scoreboard and the number one scoring offense in the NFL versus what your eyes are telling you on a weekly basis. And sometimes it's hard for those things to line up. One doesn't quite match the other. And I think the series, or the three straight three and outs to start the third quarter, were indicative of where this offense has slumped this year. Their ceiling is as high as it's ever been because they have so many talented, explosive players. They've scored 40-plus three times this year. They've scored 30-plus now eight times this year. I'd venture to guess that ranks among the best in the NFL. But it's the floor that has fallen through. And they get in these games sometimes where they just they sink to a level that ultimately craters the entire performance. And I thought those three straight three and outs just captured the issues they haven't been able to overcome all season. And I was curious this week if they had ever had a similar stretch last year, or if they had had similar stretches this year. And so I went just looking through the box scores and the play-by-plays to find other cases where they had gone either three and out or four and out with a turnover on downs or a missed field goal. Essentially three plays or four plays where they failed to convert a first down. And if they had done that three straight times before, and it has happened three times now this year. It happened against the Vikings from the second quarter to the third quarter in a game they lost. It happened, ironically, against the Buccaneers in the fourth quarter in a game they struggled to put away. And then I also looked at how many three and outs or four and outs they've had in total this year. And so far, through 14 games, 38, they had 25 all of last season. They are averaging almost twice as many three and outs per game this year. And a lot of that is tied to the leaky, inconsistent offensive line. I mean, it was Tristan Colon on one series who got beat cleanly twice by Kobe Turner. One time where Goff took a major hit that if he hadn't taken, he can probably complete maybe a 70-yard touchdown to Jamo. And then the next one results in a sack. There was a holding call, I forget on which offensive lineman, on another series that took back a first down run. And look, the hope is that inserting mahogany on Sunday cures some of this, but just from a comprehensive standpoint, Sunday for me confirmed a lot of what we thought we knew about this team, which is that they are clearly now in the second tier of the NFC. And even that might be putting it kindly.
The offense was so good in the first half, even when they knew they couldn't run the ball effectively. I thought they schemed up a great plan. I thought Campbell was in one of his best, if not his best, play calling rhythms. They found the deep ball, which had been so elusive. They really dialed up, I thought, some awesome route concepts to take advantage of what the Rams do offensively. And then you get to the second half, and the weaknesses that they were hiding show up. First, you have what I would call a pretty terrible play call, and you have Giovanni Ricci, who was making his debut. He's tight end number, I don't know, 8 for the Lions this year. Gets put one-on-one with Braden Fisk. Like, that shouldn't happen schematically. And for him to end up holding on that play, it's like, okay, what did you expect to happen? Like, he's fighting for his life and trying to protect his running back. So you negate that, you get a holding, it kills the drive, whatever. Second drive, Tristan Colon gives up the hit, causes the errant throw in the deep shot to J-Mo. Then he gives up the sack on the next play almost instantly. Like, they were hiding Colon as much as they could during the game. Goff was getting rid of it when he was in trouble. And, you know, I think that was the only sack he took of the entire game, but it kills your drive. And then you go to the third series, and it's Graham Glasgow, who doesn't get to the duo block on first down, that gives up, doesn't get to his block on the wide receiver screen to J-Mo, and then gives up pressure when he gets pushed over his teammates' feet on third down. Like, all three plays, Glasgow was kind of the negative on that series. And it's just like, those were the known weaknesses going into it. And they covered them for so long. They got 34 points out of it, as you mentioned. That's a great, great showing. And, you know, at some point you can't be consistent drive to drive to drive with this offense, because there are holes. The fact that they're getting 34 points out of it is remarkable.
Yeah. The way I see it, they need to be perfect in a game like that when your defense was giving up everything. And on the other side of the ball, you had Kyren Williams after the game saying, defenses know what's coming, and they still can't stop us, and it's a great feeling. And he was over there having a great time. Puka was out to dinner with his mom after the game, trying to get out of there as fast as possible. He's had a hell of a week, by the way. But the Rams, like, offensively felt that they could do whatever, and you kind of had the sense that, okay, if the Lions want to win this game, they cannot afford mistakes. And there were a lot of self-inflicted things, just little things here and there, which is almost in a lot of ways the story of the season. When you talk to players about, like, what's gone wrong, why the offense isn't as efficient, it's just little thing here, little thing there, or, you know, a little stall in the middle of a game where we can't overcome it, as we saw today. So it's still an accumulation of little things, and now we're in week 16 and still talking about this. But I struggle to put this on the offense again, because normally you score 34 against a defense like this, you should be able to win. But I think they're just at a point now where this feels very reminiscent of 2022, 2023, yeah, a couple of years ago, where, like, the defense couldn't stop anything and the offense just needed to do this. And Dan himself put the point of emphasis was on the offense to win these games. I think maybe in past years they got away from that a little bit. The defense improved in some areas before the injuries last year. Even this year, it felt like there were times where they could rise to the occasion. You know, they were the firefighters against the Eagles a couple weeks ago. Not so much anymore. So now it's back on the offense to kind of get it done. And when they're not as efficient as they've been in past years, you do get some of those stall outs. And against a team like that, you're not going to get it done.
It's kind of stunning how quickly the perception of this team has changed. I mean, I remember writing a month ago after that Eagles game that it was probably time for the Lions to start leaning more on their defense, because it legitimately looked like it was the strength of the team, and that you know, the offense could no longer be the unit that was carrying them. They would have to lean more on the other side of the ball. And ever since then, the four games after that, they've allowed an average of 34 points and an average of over 450 yards. And they're just giving up explosive play after explosive play. And more often than not on key downs where they have a chance to get off the field. And it's a lot of their best players getting beat, whether it's DJ Reed on the outside or it's Aleem McNeil failing to make much of an impact on the inside, or even some of these linebackers last Sunday filling the wrong gap or making the wrong read. And I think the way I framed it a couple of days ago was like, you know, two things can be true. Yeah, the offense deserves some level of blame for the loss of the Rams when they had three straight three and outs. But it's also true, and I went and looked this up, that the Lions are threatening to become the first team in 17 years to lead the NFL in scoring and miss the playoffs. That's a really, really hard thing to do. And yeah, there's still a chance that they could make the playoffs. In fact, there's still a chance that they could win their division, which every other top scoring team in that stretch has done. But I'll just tell you, like, the team we're looking at now does not resemble most or any of those teams that have also led the NFL in scoring. Like, those were almost exclusively 13, 14, or 15 win teams. The ceiling now for this team is 11 wins. And people were quick and correct to point out that the last team to miss the playoffs while leading the NFL in scoring, the 2008 Saints, turned around and won the Super Bowl the next year. And I would just point out that the Saints did that after firing their defensive coordinator, for one, which I am not advocating, but also investing their five highest picks over the prior two drafts on defensive players, and that offseason going out and signing an all-pro safety who would lead the league in interceptions the next year. Now, you do have that, because if Kirby Joseph can get healthy, maybe you can check that box. But the point I'm making here is that, like, it required a lot of change and turnover on the defensive side of the ball for the Saints to take that extreme step the next season. So you're looking at potentially something similar having to unfold for the Lions in order for their defense just to catch up a little bit again with the offense.
I thought you were talking about the 2010 Chargers, which were the number one offense and number one defense by yards, and missed the playoffs because their special teams was such a disaster.
Yeah, no, I went by scoring offense, because that's what the Lions lead the league in right now.
That's so much more sense. They missed the playoffs.
You should go back and read on that team.
That is insane. Yeah. We need to ask Dave Phipp about that. He'll give us 45 minutes.
We talk about takeaways, though, and I think a really big one for me was Campbell said something after the game. I'm paraphrasing because I wasn't in there. I don't remember the exact quote. But this, we now know what it looks like, right? Mm. We know what the best looks like. And obviously he was talking about best team in the NFC or NFL this season, but I thought about it from a bigger picture, right? I think the Lions, clearly this is not the Lions from 5, 10, 20 years ago. Like, it's a well-run organization. The culture's good. They have drafted well. They're Campbell runs a pretty tight ship, but like, the Rams are kind of showing that they're kind of the gold standard for how things are run. I think that their GM has drafted well. He's built something with purpose, and you walk away from that and you just realize how good of a coach Sean McVay is, right? For years and years and years, he was the 11 personnel guy. We've talked about this. Like, it was just, they used less players on their roster on offense. Like, the 11 guys they ran out there week in and week out was more consistent than anybody in the league. And now they're doing this 13 personnel. And it's one of those cool cyclical things you see in this league. Like, we thought it was a speed and space game, and that's where it was going, and that's what college football is now. And it's like, now all the defenses are that. Let's go big, right? Let's hit them with some power and see how they can handle it. And I don't know. I almost wonder if, like, he's surprised at his flexibility schematically to do it and execute it. But when I watch the Rams do this, I think, man, that's what the Lions have tried to be. But never have I thought, for as much as we've seen improvement from Sam Laporta in that regard, like, I've never seen their tight ends block that well. You know, these motions and insertions where you've got, you know, a tight end that I don't think of as a great blocker blocking Jack Campbell one-on-one, or pulling and blocking Aiden Hutchinson one-on-one. Like, if you can block Campbell and Hutchinson one-on-one with two tight ends, of course your run game is going to be pretty good, because you can free up your offensive linemen to climb to the second level. And that's what was killing the Lions in this game, is they just didn't have an answer schematically because they were losing one-on-one matchups to tight ends. And so, you know, I had such appreciation walking away from how well the Rams have retooled and rebuilt after they, you know, kind of went all in on their Super Bowl run.
Yeah.
Had to tear that down a little bit. And yeah, they took a step back. Like, that was understandable, but they've managed to retool, rebuild, become a favorite again, all while, you know, maybe capitalizing on one more last great run for Matthew Stafford. And I just ton of respect for their leadership, for their coaching, for their front office. It really is, if not the gold standard, I mean, you know, certainly a blueprint that, you know, other teams are probably looking to emulate.
Stafford's freaking slinging that thing still too, huh?
So good.
Oh my dude, you can hear that thing. It just blah, 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 blah. One other thing I'll add while we're sitting here comparing the Lions and the Rams, I walked away from that game on Sunday realizing that as quickly as you rise in the NFL, so too can you begin to fall off. I mean, the Lions were 2 to 3 excellent draft classes away from vaulting themselves into a different stratosphere, a stratosphere they had never really occupied in the NFL. And at the same time, you know, they're 1 to 2 spotty draft classes away from sinking back down into sort of the middle of their own conference. And part of that is due to injury. But if you look at the contributions that they've received from their draft classes over the past 2 years, it doesn't even sniff the production they were getting over the first three. And compare that to the Rams, who have starters all over the field from their recent draft classes, more so 24 and 23 than 25. But, you know, you're never all that far off from excellence in the NFL. And if you don't sustain it, especially in the draft, you're never all that far off from being an 8-16.
Yeah, I do feel like it's probably going to be an eye-opening offseason. And that's not to say they're going to go out and spend a bunch of money or change their philosophy wholesale, but it's like, I think you do have to tweak some things. They're getting to a point where like they're paying their homegrown talent and that money's starting to dry up. So how do you replace that? How do you continue to build depth? Yeah, you can sign smart players in free agency and you know, cost-controlled deals. But I think the draft is kind of where you have to – the middle rounds of the draft is where you really have to find some diamonds, which they're able to do early on in the Holmes tenure. But he's taken some swings. He's fallen in love with some players, and we all know who those players are. It hasn't really worked out with some of those guys. But I do think you probably can't afford to take the project like you wanted 2 years ago. You probably can't afford to let a guy develop for 3 years because you need guys that will be available to help when called upon the way that the Lions play the sport, which is a physical brand and practice. They want to prepare these guys for the season. The man heavy style they play, I wonder if that kind of leads to more injuries sometimes when you're at the point of attack so often. Everyone has their own reason for like probably why these injuries are piling up. But when at some point you just are what you are. The Lions have the most missed games with an IR designation of any team in the last 5 seasons, like by far. I think they lead the number 2 team by 95 games. So like that's kind of what we're talking about right now with this team. And when you get to that point, you got to be able to have some third rounders to fill the voids. You know, we're looking at the safety position right now and how that's become probably something to address this offseason. You know, you can look around and say they need maybe a center or a long-term tackle, and it's still an edge. So yeah. I agree. I think the Rams have done a good job of like, yeah, they had a down year, go 5-12, but they bounced back immediately and have been able to address holes and fill those gaps without having like the pure first round picks. I think there are ways to do it. It probably involves a little bit of tweaking, not a grand overhaul, but I think they're at that point now in the rebuild.
And they're down here came in a year when Stafford missed half the season, you know, and they turned it into a good thing via the draft.
No doubt.
Lord knows they hit on that one first round pick though with Jared Verse, but I think it's really, I don't know. I would look at it as maybe light at the end of the tunnel, or however you want to put it. Like they've got a formidable defensive line, and that, you know, was able to sustain after Aaron Donald. And I think that's incredible, but look where they got those guys, you know, Jared Verse 19, like, you know, that's looking like the range where the Lions will be picking this year, certainly within that range where you could trade up. You know, Fisk came off the board in the second round at 39. You've got Kobe Turner, who was 89th in the third round, and Byron Young, who was also third round, 77. So, like, it does show that if you have an eye for talent, you have a little bit of schematic flexibility in how you use those guys, because Young's a bender, and, you know, Turner's undersized. you know, Fisk and Verse were coming from smaller programs. Obviously, they finished at Florida State, but like, you know, there was a little bit of a, you know, question mark for level of competition for sustained amount of time. Like, if you've really got a vision, you can build a pretty good defensive line without, you know, using 3-4 top 10 picks.
Well, let's talk about that defense, because the first 11 weeks, they showed, I mean, at least enough for me to say on air that I thought they were a Super Bowl defense. I think I jinxed them. I still believe it. I said on air they were Super Bowl defense.
I think
defense.
We all did.
Yeah, the first 11 weeks, they gave up 21.6 points per game. And now of the last four games, I believe it is, you have four games, three of the four, they've given up at least 30 points. And Calvin, you know, he spoke today, and I do appreciate Calvin's accountability to some extent, where he talks about schematic changes. There's a lot of stubbornness when it comes to some coordinators, so I do respect someone who will be like, hey, we got to change things. You know, we got to find ways to put our guys in better positions. I do appreciate that, but you do have three games left. They're all must-win games. Explosive plays continue to happen. Can they stop the bleeding, fellas? Is that something that the next three games, I know it's not the Rams you're playing, obviously, but still in a three-game stretch and even potentially postseason, I mean, is this a defense that you believe can get not maybe completely back to that level, but at least stop some of the bleeding that's occurred the last couple of games?
It has to help that the Steelers and Vikings are the next two opponents after playing three really good offenses led by three really good quarterbacks in Dallas, Green Bay, and the Rams, which I'll continue to say best offense in football by, I think, a considerable margin, given the fact that they can run as effectively as they can and have an MVP quarterback throwing to two absolute elite studs on the outside. Like, that's a tough stop for anybody. Now, look, Aaron Rodgers is still pretty good. He's not Aaron Rodgers MVP multiple time, but still a pretty good quarterback, efficient, sees it well. DK Metcalf is still a player. They can run the ball. Nothing else. They stay committed to it. And look, you're getting another dose of 13 personnel this week, whether you like it or not. Like, that is a three tight end offense with an offensive tackle that plays tight end.
Darnell Washington. Let's go.
I don't know, Colton, were you on the draft Darnell train here? Because I mean, when he went out and did the combine stuff, he might have been a 10 RAS guy. Like, it's like, oh yeah, like let's I don't even know where that fits. I don't know what he does. I want to see more of that.
But it's provocative.
Yes, give me provocative. Like, but it's the Steelers offense is mid. It's a mid-tier offense, right? Minnesota, for as many weapons they have, the quarterback questions are still there. Like, that is enough to kind of help you get right. I did find it very encouraging. You know, Shepard said, you know, schematic changes, particularly in the secondary, right? They've got to stop these explosive plays. You plug in whatever number you want in terms of yards passed. I know True Media, Colton's favorite, uses 16 yards as an explosive play. 20 yards is the NFL. .com standard. Doesn't matter what it is, the Lions are the worst in the league. They've given up 53 or 54 20 plus. They've given up 29 plays of 30 plus, which is just ridiculous. A lot of that is because they play man coverage 35-40% of the time, and when they do, they put those guys on an island with cover one safety kind of playing the middle of the field, and those guys on the outside have to play one-on-one deep. And turns out they both like to take some chances on those up and outs, those double moves. And, you know, it's just biting them over and over and over again. I think we're going to see a little bit more cover two than cover one with some of those with back in that man coverage going forward. That would be my best schematic guess, given DJ Reed, Meek Robertson, and Rocky Sin a little bit more backing over the top to help them out. And if that reduces even one or two explosive plays a game, like that could go a long way for this group right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'll echo what Justin said. You know, looking at 20 completions of 20 or more, they've allowed like 54 overall the season, and 27 of those have come in the last four games alone. Damn. Which is pretty remarkable. So yeah, I do think everyone's asking, how do we stop the bleeding? How do we do this? I do think a lot of it is quarterback play. I mean, they've just came out of a gauntlet of quarterbacks. They played you know, Dak Prescott, Jordan Love, Matthew Stafford. Those are three of the top seven quarterbacks in terms of EPA per dropback this year. They've three of the most efficient quarterbacks in the NFL, and that's the sort of schedule you just came out of. So, I don't know. I look at that, I'm like, it should be easier. Like, Aaron Rodgers is 23rd. Like, you know, he gets the ball out quickly. I think that's going to be, you know, probably a point of emphasis trying to pressure him, but he gets the ball out so damn quick. That's going to be tough. But if you can get to him a little bit, it could help. I think he's 23rd in EPA per dropback. You got nine coming up on Christmas Day. He's 40th out of 44. So it's going to even out a little bit. I know we tend to look at these stretches and say, oh, man, like the defense, like how do they fix this? And we look at the injuries. How do they stop this? A lot of it is just who you play, who you're lining up against over a certain period. And they just came out of a really tough stretch. So that could be part of it. I do think they need to put a lot of stress and challenge their front seven, because the way they got bullied against the Rams is something that really shouldn't happen with the sort of personnel you play. So those guys need to play better. And they know that. Like, Aleem will say the same thing. Guys are going to Kelvin Shepard and saying, I didn't play well enough. That's below my standards. I can be better. So when you're talking about how this defense can improve, they just got to, a lot of their best players need to be at their best with the final three games left on the schedule. If not, they might get bullied off the field again. Like, we don't know, but the margin for error is so slim. It's non-existent at this point. You got to win all three. And if your defense is going to give up 34 a game and that puts so much stress on your offense, it's going to make it tough. And like, that's sort of where they are right now. But I do think they can be better than this. It is kind of puzzling to me how they've fallen off the tracks the way they have, even with the injuries, because, you know, Legion of Boom game, they were pretty good there. And yeah, you know, Baker's a good quarterback. So obviously some other guys were back for that. But yeah, man, I just think it's a little bit confusing how this defense has gotten to where it is. But I do think they can play better. And I think the schedule lightening up with some quarterback play might set up for that. So we'll see.
Yeah, the schedule should correct at least their run game woes that Kelvin Shepard doesn't want to admit are real this Sunday. I mean, this is a Steelers offense and an offensive line that really hasn't generated any push all season. I saw today, I believe their offensive line is second to last in the NFL in yards before contact in their run game. So Tyleek and Aleem and DJ and Roy should definitely be able to generate some more penetration on Sunday. And maybe that helps them feel better about their performance last Sunday. Aleem, since you brought him up, Colton, was especially disappointed in how he played last Sunday. And honestly, how he's played for most of the eight games since his return from his ACL, which is troubling or puzzling, because he looked like an absolute animal in his return. That Bucs game, especially in the first half, he was maybe as unstoppable an interior pass rusher on a consistent basis as I've watched live in the NFL. Like, he was just putting his head down and bullying almost every single center or guard he lined up against. And, you know, he had talked so much about putting on extra muscle and how it had showed up in practice. And then he went out and he proved it on the field against a legitimate offensive line. You're like, oh my God, Aleem's about to reach an entirely new level here. And aside from the Packers game where he was similarly disruptive on Thanksgiving, that version of Aleem McNeil just hasn't resurfaced. He had a combined 12 quarterback pressures in those two games, the Packers game and the Buccaneers game. In his six other games combined, 11 quarterback pressures. And he was especially, I don't want to say invisible because he popped a couple times, but unnoticeable on Sunday against the Rams. Wasn't alone in that feeble performance. But when I talked to him this week about it, he said he feels like right now he's trying to process too much before the snap and during the snap, that is taking away his focus from the simple task of just getting on his block and, as he says, destroying his block. He even said, you know, I'm trying to play linebacker and defensive tackle at the same time, and there's no need for a defensive tackle to try to do that. I just need to simplify things and get back to winning mano a mano. And, you know, it's fair to point out the Rams definitely doubled him a fair share last Sunday, but he also had some one-on-ones where he just didn't pop. He knows that he has to be a lot better. He said he's got nothing lingering with the knee. I'll take him at his word for that. He really feels like it's the mental side of the game where he hasn't made his full return yet, hasn't found his flow yet, much more than the physical. I think in some ways that's probably encouraging. It would be a little bit more disconcerting if he was like, yeah, the knee's just not quite there yet. I don't have that same explosiveness. But he felt like it was just an issue of locking in mentally and taking the right approach to playing his blocks. But we got to talk about the run game. Like, we just have to talk about the run defense that was, it was gashed. And I know Kelvin Shepherd will reject that word. It was gouged. I know he'll reject that word. In fact, I remember asking him after the Vikings game in week 9 about the run defense, which I think I had said was gashed a couple times that day. And he pushed back on that and was like, I don't know what you mean by gash, but here are the numbers. And he listed off how their yards per carry, if you eliminate a couple of the explosive plays, was actually closer to like 3.5 that day, while conveniently including the 3 kneel downs that JJ McCarthy had at the end of the game, which if you had excluded would have pushed it back over 4. And you know, Justin asked Kelvin again today about the run game, and specifically last week, and how I forget the exact word you used. Oh, how it took a step back. And we can all agree it did. You can look at that game, you can look at the numbers and come away with a clear conclusion that the run game was a weakness. And he resisted that and said, I don't think it took a step back. He said, I thought outside of 3-4 plays in the game, I liked where we stood as far as fitting the run. Look, Kelvin Shepherd has already forgotten more about NFL defense than I will ever know. I want to be very clear about that. I am not coming on here suggesting that I know more about football than Kelvin Shepherd. But when I go back and watch that game, I have a hard time understanding his perspective. And just take the very first drive, the very first play of the game, Kyren Williams, 6 yards up the gut, where McNeil and Reeder were moved aside. The linebackers were knocked back, erased. And it was a corner and a safety who had to make the tackle. It was Reed and Maddox. That set up 2nd and 4. First down to Devontae Adams. The next first down run, Kyren Williams, 6 yards up the middle between Marcus Davenport and DJ Reeder. And it was, again, a safety, Eric Hallett, who had to make the tackle. 2nd and 4, first down to Adams. The next first down run, they finally get a stop. Better push by McNeil and Barnes and Anzalone, and then Hutch and Campbell kind of erased it. But the second drive, First down run, Blake Corum, 6 yards up the gut between Tyreek Williams and Al-Quadeen Muhammad. 2nd and 4 leads to that drop on what should have been a huge gain to Puka Nacua. And then 1st and goal later that drive, Kyren Williams untouched up the middle and into the end zone, where the entire line was blown apart, like Lopez, Tyreek, Davenport, even Wheat on the edge. And I think maybe the linebackers bit on like a motion to Nacua, and maybe the safeties did too, but shoot, that run might have gone for 80 if they had been backed up on their 20-yard line. And then take, I think maybe most glaringly, the last drive of the game, when the Lions were absolutely desperate for a quick stop to give their offense a chance to tie the game. The Rams come out, 1st and 10 run, Kyren Williams up the middle for guess how much? 6 yards, where DJ Reeder and Marcus Davenport were driven back, where Aleem was stood up on a one-on-one, where Anzalone and Campbell were driven back by Marcus Davenport being driven back into them. And then 2nd and 4, it's Kyren again for 6 yards up the middle, where Davenport's tossed aside by a double team. Barnes is tossed back by a tight end, and Reeder kind of looped around the center to nowhere, and Aleem was stood up. And I think Anzalone might have like read the cutback wrong. And at that point, the game's over. They get to stop, but the offense has 13 seconds left when they get the ball. And it's just my way of saying I don't find myself looking at the same thing that Kelvin Shepherd is, because I know he says that if you take away the 19-yarder and the 24-yarder, which you can't do, that he held them, or the defense held them, to around 4 yards per carry. That's not true. He said that would rank toward the top 10 in the league, which is where you want to be. If you take away those two runs, the 19-yarder and the 24-yarder, the Rams running backs, Corum and Kyren, combined still for 106 yards on 24 carries, which is 4.4 yards per carry, which would rank toward the bottom 10 of the NFL. And just to round off this point, if you want to play that game, hey, we're going to take away the 2 longest runs we surrendered, the Rams would say, okay, then we're taking away our 2 shortest runs, because surely those were outliers as well. And if you do that, and you continue with Kelvin's sort of math here, now it's back up to 4.7 yards per carry for Kyren Williams and Blake Corum, which would be over the course of this season, the fifth worst in the NFL. And the last thing I'll say here is that the Lions allowed on first down runs 7 yards per carry. And you found the Rams in second and four or second and three far too often in that game for the defense to get consistent stops. The run defense has been elite at times and a strength for the better part of 4 years here. I think we can all agree, in all honesty, that it was gouged on Sunday.
You know why I said step back, Will? It's because when you said gashed, it got pushed back. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to softball this and give him a chance to answer to, if I would have said abused, worked, manhandled, which were all true, it would have shut him down even more. I thought, you know, saying a step back was going to get an answer, and what it got was denial. And that was, you know, should be frustrating to the fan base, because it was embarrassing.
Yeah. Well, bravo, whatever the hell you just did for the last 3 minutes. Bravo. All right. You just walked through. If people who are watching, this is why you tune into Lions Collective. If you had any doubt in your mind and you were listening to Calvin, you're like, you know what? Maybe he's right. Maybe they didn't get gashed. Everything you just broke down leads to exactly that. Let's take a quick break. We'll hear from our friends over at Sleeper. When we get back, we'll get into the potential return of Christian Mahogany. But we'll see you guys in 30 seconds.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using the code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
All right, Sleeper, a proud sponsor of Lions Collective. Let me tell you about them. They're one of the fastest organically growing fantasy platforms in the entire world. They have over 6 million active users. They still earn some of the highest levels of engagement in the industry. And they also have Sleeper Picks, which is a fun product they also have. You just choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players from pregame live or across different sports. You pick more or less, which you probably could have done for Kyren and Blake Corum. You just slap the more, and you would have probably cashed out. On Sleeper, you can get up to 1,000x payouts. You share with your friends. Get rewarded together. Use that code HMA. And tell them your friends over at Lions Collective sent you. We appreciate Sleeper, as always, for sponsoring the show. We have more to get to. I do want to spend some time here and talk a little bit about the potential return of some players. Christian Mahogany, who, you know, better than Tristan Colon. I will say that. We saw Tristan Colon struggle last week. And then you still have kind of Kirby, didn't practice, hasn't practiced. But we'll just stick with Mahogany here. What kind of boost do you guys kind of foresee Mahogany giving an offensive line that just so desperately needs starters, even though, you know, even with Mahogany, it was a little shaky. But what can Christian Mahogany provide to this offense that they don't currently have without him?
Yeah, I mean, at the risk of offending Will and his love for all things Boston College, you know, I think Mahogany was probably one of my bigger letdowns in the first half of the season. You know, yeah. We talked about three players coming out of training camp.
I quit awesome. The Lions Collective.
We talked about three players coming out of training camp that I think universally impressed. And that was Mahogany, yeah, Terrion Arnold, and Jamison Williams. And all three were kind of early season duds, which was an embarrassing look for us.
Scene for us.
Yeah. But like JMO has finally turned that corner, showing what he's about. It'll be nice that if Mahogany can come back, but like, it is very clearly an upgrade from the rotation they've been throwing out there. I know people are super excited about Miles Frazier. I know they've scored a lot of points on the series he's been out there, but it's covering up some pretty shaky play. I would say he's playing at the same level that Giovanni Manu played against Cincinnati, if that gives you some context. You know, both were
harsh.
But it's reality. Like they both were very, very shaky in their limited action. And Mahogany will stabilize the weakest position on the line until maybe Sunday when Graham Glasgow can't go. You know, we don't know that, but he popped up on the injury report with a knee. Cologne has been his backup. He's dealing with a wrist injury. I think that might take him out of the center mix. And if Glasgow can't go, I'm telling people this might be a Kingsley Aguakin game this week. And
yeah,
surprise, like here's another young, inexperienced offensive lineman to roll out there for the Lions.
By the way, it's so funny that when Frank retired and we got a chance to talk to Dan, like literally like the first player he mentioned, you know, we got Kingsley Aguakin.
Yeah.
We just haven't seen him.
But we have Frank Ragnow at home.
Yeah. Yeah. Really. I'd be curious to see if that comes to fruition, Justin. Yeah. That'd be something. But in terms of Mahogany, I mean, I think he struggled in pass protection. He's a young guard and, you know, a 6th round pick, really playing his first time as a full-time starter. He had a couple spot starts last year, but first taste of NFL football week in and week out. And so I think it showed at times. I thought he did some good stuff in the run game. And I think, you know, when you talk about, and I know there's like some communication errors early in the season, but when he went out, there was still some of that going on when you're trying to plug in piece, find new bodies in there. We've seen like penalties pop up or this guy blocks the wrong guy. So I think he, in a weird way, as a young player, could provide some stability in there, at least in the run game. And maybe he finds a rhythm and gets to a groove late in the year, and the run game can improve and at least be more consistent than they've been. Because sometimes it's like they've kind of been boom or bust at points this year. The interior rushing has kind of been, you know, hit or miss. But if he's able to come in and stabilize some of that, or at least get them on the same page with some of the miscommunication errors, I guess we've seen since he's been out, maybe that can help stabilize. But he wasn't great in pass protection, I'll say that. And, yeah, and the Lions did play good defensive lines, and with good interior pieces, he struggled. So I do wonder about that, but that's sort of been the story of the season at left guard, I guess, even with guys that have replaced him.
Yeah, I mean, Justin, I would just ask you, what was the Lions' record with a healthy Mahogany and without a healthy Mahogany?
I don't know. Can you just go run play by run play for the whole season? We're not going to include
the Vikings game because you got hurt in that game. So we'll attribute that one to the loss column, which would make them 5-2 with him and 3-4 without him.
All right.
Like that, right? Yeah. So clearly the MVP of the squad. You know who's most excited for Christian Mahogany's return?
You. You. Talked
to him yesterday. His girlfriend, who is like, he's been watching most of these games at home. Because early on, he wasn't able to be on the sideline after the surgery, and he didn't want to watch from the box. So he was watching the games at home with his girlfriend, and he was like, dude, I yell at the TV during the games. Like, if I see Jared or hear Jared check into a play, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is going to work. This is going to work. And then I start screaming if it works or it doesn't work, and I'm just getting hyped for my boys. And I guess she was like, you need to get out of the house.
Please leave.
You need to go back to work. So I think she'll be happy to know that he'll have something to do on Sunday other than watch that game with them. It sounds like he's going to play, you know, a full practice yesterday and today. That's his intention. You know, he said he feels rejuvenated from these 7 or 8 weeks off, which he obviously should. I mean, he got basically a month and a half after playing some, no, the most strenuous football of his career to rest emotionally, physically, you know, psychologically even, he said. And he said, you know, I'm as fresh as I can be at this point in the year. So, you know, that can only be a good thing for this team as they try and mount a push here in the final three games. And it helps that, you know, he's stepping into what's been the weakest point of this offensive line without him. If he can even get that left guard spot back to serviceable from an NFL perspective, it could go a long way for the offense. Like, for example, I know he hasn't been great in pass protection, but if you put him in there on the series last week where Cologne gets beat on back-to-back reps by Kobe Turner, can he win at least one of those reps? Yeah, probably. And does that change the game? It might. Yeah. You know, that like, if you get 1 to 2 to 3 plays per game that are better than Tristan Cologne or Coyote Awusika or Miles Frazier that erase mistakes, that's when a 41-34 loss might look more like a 41-34 win. So, yeah, I do think it can have a big boost down the stretch. And if they continue to have to outscore teams, you know, his fresh legs could go a long way for that offensive line.
You know why he's really psychologically recovered, Will?
Tell me.
Boston College's season's over. That 2-10 yeah. campaign is done.
So they can't hurt me anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, you look ahead, and I know we have the Steelers game. I mean, we mentioned it earlier. The next three games is obviously a lighter three-game stretch than the prior three games they just had. But it's hard for me to believe, and this is probably being pessimistic as well, even though I'm trying to be as optimistic as possible. The next three games, you go 3-0. They're must-win games. You have to win out, go 11-6. And, you know, you make the playoffs. It comes down to that last game against the Bears, which is a whole nother thing. But overall, they just got to win out. This is also a team over the last 10 weeks that cannot put together two games in a row. They can't win two games in a row, or at least struggled to win two games in a row. Why should fans feel confident, or what are some reasons to be confident that they can finish this year 3-0 and get into the playoffs?
I'll get you to week 18. I'm not going to make any promises because I think that Bears team is cooking with gas just based strictly on their confidence right now. That team has a lot of swagger, and you know, I'm not saying it's a unwinnable game. That's ridiculous, but that's a much better team than you saw in week 2. But right now, this Steelers team, not only are they, you know, in kind of that same B tier as the Lions, it's a home game one, and they're banged up. You know, they're down their starting left tackle. Their backup left tackle has a concussion that he's working through. They lost their starting guard in the last game. They're down TJ Watt from the freakish of freakish's injuries with a dry needling puncturing his lung. Probably not going to play this week. Down a cornerback, down another defensive lineman. Like, they are banged up. So this is a very winnable game. That gets you to Minnesota. And obviously, Minnesota wrecked you the last time. I think, you know, that was the straw that broke the back with John Morton as the play caller. They did it just well enough in that one. I think you should feel better about Dan Campbell calling plays because he has a better line of communication to his players to adjust for one. Two, what are the Vikings playing for? I know, obviously, their quarterback is trying to prove that he belongs in this league, but Jonathan Grenard as John Neal loves to say, has pulled the parachute already on the season. He's getting surgery. He's done for the year. They've got some of their other top players that are not practicing this week, and Darisaw and Hargrave. So, like, you know, that's just a situation where you could take advantage of a team that just has nothing to play for other than pride, right? And you get to Chicago, and, you know, the script writers get their win. I mean, it is the ultimate ending that they could have hoped for. It's going to be, if it works out that way, it's going to be the primetime game, the last game of the season, all the marbles. And you know, it's certainly the best case scenario with how things have gone, but look, they got to get past Pittsburgh first. That's what it boils down to. You got to get the next one to get to Christmas, to get to week 18. But I do think there's reason for hope just the way the opponents are lining up, if nothing else.
Yeah, they've reached sort of the soft spot on their schedule. I think that's sort of the way to put it. I know the Steelers are in the driver's seat for a playoff spot in ways that the Lions are not right now, but I think that has more to do with the division they play in than anything else. This is sort of an inconsistent team, kind of where they've been, I guess. They're consistently inconsistent under Tomlin the last few years, but they don't really scare me if I'm the Lions. I think this is a game that they should win at home, bounce back after a loss. This is sort of what they do. So if you get this one, then you're talking about, again, facing 9 in the Minnesota Vikings. If you lose that dude twice in one season, then you're going to have to talk
about some major changes. You get
relegated. Yeah, no doubt. So that's when they should win. If they can get the offensive line communication stuff figured out against a Flores defense without Frank Ragnow. But if they do that, then it does come down to week 18. So really it's just, I know they say focus on the one in front of you. I think you can probably focus on the two, but, you know, if you get through those two, you earn the right to, with a little bit of help, you know, if you get it, potentially have a win and end game in Chicago. And that's the toughest one. Cause I mean, part of me goes, ooh, Ben Johnson having to play a potential win and end game against his former team. Like, he could be panicking over there, and the Bears, a young team that haven't been in the spot for a while, like, they could be panicking. But at the same time, I look at the Lions, I'm like, oh, that's an outdoor game. Weather, the conditions might not be great. You know, they sort of have to prove that they can be that team and win 3 in a row in ways that they haven't done this year. So it's like, there's some pressure on them too. So, obviously, focus on the one in front of you. This should be a gettable game, but I do think the schedule sort of allows for two in a row at least in ways that it hasn't most of the year. So if you get that done, you show some consistency, have a little bit of momentum going into week 18, and you get some help around you, they can absolutely make a push. I don't think it's all around possibility. And even you know, losing to the Rams, when you're looking at those final four games, that was always the game that was like the most losable. Like, I don't know how many of us, I predicted on the win just out of sheer like vibes, I guess. But even then, it's like, okay, you lose that one, you got the schedule to win out.
Right.
That was always the biggest thing to me. Like, if you needed three wins in some combination, get in those final three if that's what it takes. So that's where they're at now.
Yeah. The other reason for belief is I do think the Lions are going to get the help they need, and they will need it even if they win their final three. I think, and I say this carefully because they've proven me wrong all season, it's reasonable to expect the Bears to drop one of those two games, either Saturday night against the Packers or the following weekend against the 49ers. And then that would, if you take care of business, set up this titanic clash in week 18. I don't think it's as reasonable to expect the Packers to lose twice. I know that's kind of become the trendy take because Mike is out and Devontae Wyatt's out and they seem like a vulnerable team, but I think you're better suited chasing the team that you play in week 18 that also has to play two of the better teams in the NFC over the next 2 weeks. You have a little more control over how the Bears finish than how Green Bay finishes. I'll add maybe a wider view here at what feels like it's been a pretty somber show. If the Lions can get in, and I actually think they will, they have as good a chance as anyone, in my opinion, not named the Rams, to make some noise in the playoffs. And I've been kind of bouncing this question around my head to myself all week long, which is, if we accept the Rams are the best team in the NFC, who's the next best team in the NFC? Is it Seattle with Sam Darnold at quarterback? Is it San Francisco missing their two best defensive players in Nick Bosa and Fred Warner and lacking a number one receiver? Is it Philly, who's looked vulnerable all season long and is probably a couple questionable Dan Campbell decisions away from losing to the Lions at home a month ago? Is it Carolina? No, but they did beat the Rams. Is it Tampa? No. Is it Green Bay without Micah Parsons, Devontae Wyatt, and I think Christian Watson is hurt now? I don't know, maybe. Is it Chicago, who you hung 50 on back in week two? I know it's a different team now than it was then, but I don't know. Is it you? It might be. If you can get into the playoffs and you will have won, yes, J-Raj, if you can get into the playoffs and you will have won three games in a row, and you'll be feeling good about yourself, and we can assume that the defense would have rebounded and the offense would have caught some extra life with Christian Mahogany, can you make noise? Absolutely. And if the matchups line up, can someone else potentially pick off the Rams before you would have to run into them? Absolutely. I mean, we'll see how the seeding shakes out if they do get there, but I think it's worth revisiting something I've been trying to iterate for a couple months now, which is that while this is clearly a lesser team than it's been in the past 2 years, it is also a lesser NFL. The landscape of the league right now probably creates a playoff scenario where there's 8 or 9 possible Super Bowl contenders. And I don't think we could say that in all legitimacy last year or the year before. So like when I was talking with Anzalone yesterday, and I was kind of having this conversation with him, he was like, yeah, man, we just got to get in. We just got to get in. And it honestly took me back to the end of 2022 when they were actually playing as well as maybe any team in the NFL. And we all kind of agreed, man, if that team gets in the playoffs, heads up, they'll make some noise. They obviously don't have the same momentum now that they had then. But if they get in, they will have built significant momentum. And I do think that would make them a threat in the playoffs. And speaking of Anzalone, look, this might be his last home game as a Lion on Sunday. He's well aware. He's been thinking about it. He's going to have his son Cooper there, who I think turns 5 this coming year, who usually can't make it to 425 games. Those are too late, but mom and dad made an exception knowing how important this was to Anzalone. He said he might get the feels when they announce him as a starter for the final time, what could be the final time at Ford Field. He wants to return. He has expressed that to the organization. Obviously, he would also like to be paid fair value, and he'll be playing next year and probably for the next 3 to 4 years, he said, whether it's here or elsewhere. But he is well aware that he's looking at a game that could end his tenure in Detroit anyways, and what's been a special place for him to play and for his family to become who they are now. So if there was ever a time for a big Alex Anzalone legacy game like the one he had last year against the Vikings in the season finale, you know, maybe this is it.
Before we get out of here, score predictions. What do we got, guys? I have 27-20. Lions win.
I forgot. Who brings these score predictions? Remind me.
Dog and Pony Show Brewery, baby. Presented go check them out.
By the one, the only. Presented by Dog and Pony Show Brewing.
What if I go blowout? Because I'm feeling a blowout. Give me 37-23 with injured Kirby Joseph picking off a throwaway on the sideline, because why the hell not?
I'll go 31-24 Lions.
Yeah, I kind of think the Lions roll on this one too. I think this matchup suits them well. I think it actually allows them to kind of get back to their identity. I think this is a Steelers rushing attack that the Lions really should smother. I think their front seven should kind of feel its oats again on Sunday. Like they should be able to impose themselves on that offense the way they weren't last week, and set themselves up for a better showing the rest of the way. And you know, I think the offense should be able to move the ball on the ground as well. So I'll take the Lions to win on Sunday 30-17. I'll just say this, man, if there's one guy on this planet who would love to bury the Lions more than Aaron Rodgers, I'm not sure he exists. Like, he knows exactly what happened at the end of 2022. The Lions put an end to his Packers career at Lambeau, kept them out of the playoffs. He kind of has a chance to return the favor to this team on Sunday. He's going to come in wanting to send a message and a reminder that he has been their longtime tormentor.
Well, there you have it. Shout out, of course, to see Kyle in there, my guy. Dog and Pony Show Brewing. Go get a brew, especially for the game. You go watch the game. We'll be back next Wednesday.
Did you make all a right? pick?
Yes, 27-20.
Okay, all right. Yep. I just didn't listen. Nice.
Yeah. You know what? That's accountability. All right.
That's called podcasting.
That's called podcasting. We'll be back next week, or actually Tuesday next week. Yeah, Tuesday, right? Tuesday.
Yes.
Yeah, Tuesday.
So Tuesday at 6 p.m. But until then, we will catch you all.